Could we come back together, please? Before we turn, now you remember that the question that we have, that what we're going to be addressing is about the interests of God. What are the interests of God? What does God want done with the gifts that God has given us? Because they're not idle gifts. And the gifts that we have listed for ourselves are the gifts of various kinds of power. And let's take a minute and see if there's any question about the kinds of power. I'm suggesting that everybody in this room has some claim to each one of them to some degree, some greater and less and all that other kind of thing, but it's something that we all own. Are there any questions about or comments about the categories of power? Because what we're talking about, the next step that we're going to, is we're going to talk about the interests of God. Then the question is going to be, well, now, if that's what God wants done, if that's what God is focused on, and God has provided my life with these gifts, a la this sheet of paper, how can I employ, how can we as a diocese, how can I as an individual, how can we employ these gifts to serve these interests as a diocese, as a church, as individuals? So that's the conversation that we're having. But let's take a moment and see if we're clear about the various kinds of power. Yes, ma'am, Lily. Clergy leadership was the main factor. No, your point is very well taken. Somebody had made the point in our discussion, I don't remember exactly who, that when the gifts that we're given are separated from love, you know, they become part of our problem and our dissension. And I think that you're touching on a similar point, that God allows us power, certainly the power as free human beings, and then in the course of life we have picked up other forms of power. All of those are quite capable of becoming idols or weapons as well as instruments of service. And so it's there. Another is that I read a survey a long, 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 long time ago, but people who do what we do for a living are people who basically are attracted to ego rewards. Because you get a lot of ego satisfaction doing what we do, you don't get a lot of money. You know, the people who are attracted to money are in mergers and acquisitions. People who are satisfied with feeling good about themselves in this context, you know, that's one of the things, that's part of our rewards. It's not good, bad, or indifferent, but it carries the danger that you're talking about. And it's a very, very true thing. Yes, ma'am.
I was wondering about the source for these observances of power. Because they seem very much like what I would, in the Gospel of John, would be described as worldly powers. Otherwise, they do not seem biblical, given the image that we have of Jesus kneeling and washing the feet of his disciples.
That's true. They come, possibly with the exception of spiritual power. They are secular terms. They are that. And the source of this, these are things that many, many years ago that I gathered and have massaged since then as part of a doctoral thesis project. So that's where they came from. But they have a secular statement because I use them in a variety of places. But, you know, I think that you could probably put biblical words on them, but I hope these words are clear. But you're quite right. They're not scriptural in tone. You're right. I think they're still accurate, but they're not scriptural in tone. Yes, sir.
He said that millennials do not respect the power of an office in general. It's only about relationships. If they like the person, that's fine. If they don't like the person, the office doesn't matter. So could you comment on how these relate to different groups of people?
Well, that's a good point. And I think that that there are generational differences. And I was talking to somebody during the break. All of these exercises of power are done in community. It's all the power itself isn't power unless there's some community in which it is manifest and works. Obviously, that community has to be known and understood. If you serve churches in different cultural contexts, you're aware, of how those systems work. And it's true generationally, that what the manner in which you can talk to somebody is a millennial, as opposed to someone whose understanding of life was formed in the 40s and 50s, which had a pretty clear structures that were trusted, or the images of modernism as opposed to postmodernism, give you different things. If you're going to exercise power, then you need to know where you're exercising it. Are you talking to a group of people for whom the office of whatever means something or nothing? Well, if you don't know that going in, if you've got any brains, you'll figure it out pretty quickly. And so your point is well taken, but it has to do with the reality of being in community, and then okay, now who's the community and what are they like? So that's a good point. Let me come over. Yes, ma'am, and then.
To go back to the other comments that were being done before, I would have liked to see included on here, just with at least with caveat, is coercive power.
What kind?
Coercive.
Coercive power.
Because as individuals, that's always a danger, and even as communities, because oftentimes we see groups wielding their power in the name of God in a coercive manner, and
right.
to know the difference, at least just to note it.
Right. And certainly it is there, and we are not, our history is certainly not immune to it. We talked about some of our history last night, and we've done all those things. We've exercised coercive power. I would say that in considering the gifts that God has given us, the coercive power would be fairly low on the list, the foot washing image over here. So that's why it's not on the list, but that is good. You're quite right. And one of the dangers of a gift of power is that when you can't get it to work, that you begin to resort to coercive techniques and powers. And so that's not so good. Excuse me? Oh, yes. Right. It is an adjective that goes with power. It is a way of doing it. Thank you. Yes, sir. I think Jennifer had a hand up first over here in the corner, and then we'll come back to you, sir. Francis's microphone to Jennifer.
Also going back to an earlier statement, I think more of a problem than egos where churches are succeeding or people feeling that they're the problem as clergy if the church isn't succeeding are the clergy who don't take responsibility when the church is not growing and think it's not their fault. Mm-hmm. And what I heard in this first part of going back and listening to what the Spirit is saying to the churches is that clergy and other leaders, but particularly the head of a congregation, head of a diocese, have to love their people. And
Absolutely.
Their people have to know that they are loved.
Absolutely.
And I have all too often witnessed churches where people felt they weren't getting enough.
Mm-hmm.
So they turn inward and they're not able to turn outward and share the love
failure of leadership. One of the principles that I'm sure most of you are aware of, it's the words on it, that if you do not, stated negatively, if you do not establish yourself as a pastor, you can do nothing as a prophet. Or, in the reverse, if you establish yourself as a pastor, you can do almost anything as a prophet. But it's the essential, that essential connection needs to be real, needs to be there. And I think it's also important that, you know, we carry out these ministries in the arena of reality. And the real appropriate understanding of what did I have to do with what's happening here and what did I not have to do, that's an important thing. And that's one of the gifts we can give to one another, you know, because objectivity is not, it doesn't come with the basic kit that most of us have. And so, you know, so it's we need one another in order to have that objectivity to say, well, yeah, Frank, you could have, yeah, you dropped the ball there, but you didn't mess everything up. I mean, that's there's more going on than just you. So, yes, sir, right here, gentlemen.
Essential to what the discussion is about to be about the Diocese of Virginia, but in looking at your list of categories, it seems to me that General Convention, as a structural power, devalues and diminishes every one of the power categories that you follow here: reputational, coalitional, communicational, skill, spiritual, financial. Many of us just don't think General Convention works anymore, and if it is such a large appendage to the Diocese of Virginia, it has to work in order for us to be able to be all that we can be here. Mm-hmm. So I know that doesn't go exactly to your point, but nevertheless, some change has to take place both with the House of Bishops and the House of Deputies. It has to be cleansed.
I think your point is well taken, and that is certainly a view in terms of understanding, what these people are there for. I mean, why do we have it in the first place, and does it play a role? Is it simply playing the role badly, or is it playing a role we no longer need played, which is, I think, part of your point? Or do we not understand the role that it plays? All of those questions, I think, are legitimate questions for people to raise. So, thank you. Yes, sir, right here, and then we'll go back.
Growing up in the church in the 40s and the 50s, a priest or a father.
Mm-hmm. There's a mic there for you.
Over 50 years. We are in the process of culture change, where it used to be father knows best.
Mm-hmm.
And I know when my dad first got into an argument with one of his parishioners, who happened to be a woman, he didn't know exactly what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because his authority was never challenged.
Mm.
And so we have culture change going on. That's what I understand when you're talking about power. This is more of the change.
Yes, sir.
Where a lot of us have to swallow something.
Yes, sir.
In order for them to believe you.
Yes, sir. And that's true. And when I think one of the things that when Jesus told Peter to feed his sheep, part of that means swallowing some things that maybe we'd rather not. But that's just, it's there, and it's part of that reality. A hand right back here in the corner. Thank you, sir.
You know, Frank, thinking about the seminal work of Walter Wink and the mm-hmm. biblical scholar Walter Wink and his work on principalities and powers,
yes.
and that deeper nature of evil, of the evil sense of power, that goes deeper than the worldly power that we're talking about, mm-hmm. a deep, dark corners of power, and how it really is prayer, and both individual prayer and corporate prayer. And we haven't talked a lot about this morning about the nature of prayer and how it can deal with that sense of deep abiding evil that's in the world. And I think what Wink was talking about was how to deal with that on a prayerful level.
Right.
I think it's an important thing to remember.
It is very important to remember. And I think that we're talking here about power understood in layers, because when Wink, for the most part, his work is about spiritual powers, of, you know, forces within the world and in life, which are very much a part of what we're addressing and dealing. We're not there. We're not going there. What this is about are the particular power manifestations that we have, as the lady pointed out over here, in kind of a secular sense of things causing and preventing change, which they're connected, but they're layers of a thing. But your point is very well taken. Thank you. Yes, Torrance?
We do not have any or many good contemporary models of use of these powers. Now, let's lay Jesus aside for a minute, who came and showed a different way.
Right.
However, when I look at communicational power and we look at all our news media, when I look at how coalitions are building, sometimes for the good, but so our whole environment, both the church and the unchurched that tune into the wider world, are seeing models that are, I wouldn't say, manipulative, coercive, for, you know, to get one group ahead, et cetera. Even the spiritual power and concerns about church groups or certain components of our church, the faithful coming together to make change in ways that maybe others don't want. So we do not have good contemporary models of exercise of this power. And it's power is power. It's how you exercise it. What
right.
You do
power,
with it.
Power itself is morally neutral. I mean, it's a question of how it's exercised is the point. I think that the thing is that not that we don't have those examples, I think we don't see them. Because they're there. I mean, there are people who are doing this very, very well, and I think they're not unrepresented in this room. But it's there. One of the continuing proofs of the fallen nature of our world is the simple fact that negatives weigh more than positives. That if you have a bad example and a good example, it's the bad example that will hold the spotlight. And it's just. And, you know, it's like when somebody tells you, you know, you've got this wonderful quality and that wonderful quality, the other wonderful quality, but it wipes out everything they just said and you're waiting for the negative to fall. You know, so the negatives do weigh more than positives in our world, and that's part of the nature of Wink's powers, you know, at work in this world. So I think that I quite agree with your point, but I think the point is not that we don't have it, it's that we don't see it, because they are there. And I would say, again, it's not without representation in this group. We're going to get ready to turn a corner, but there's a hand up here. We'll do that and then start to turn a corner unless there's some... yes, sir, go ahead.
Yeah, I've been excited in the past 2 years with the emergence of diaconal ministry, permanent diaconal ministry in the diocese. As I've seen this happen in other dioceses, deacons have been working in effect for the ministry of the whole diocese through the bishop. Mm-hmm. That they are called into a connection between the church and the wider seculum in which it finds itself, the issue that Ben Campbell spoke to help us avoid being like astronomers who study only the telescope. I really get nervous at the fact that all of our conversation is about the church. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that the vocational diaconate pulls us out of that. But to have that work, it seems to me you have to rest that in a common understanding of specifically what the needs are in the seculum that we find ourselves. And I wonder, is there a process of getting at that? I mean, we're doing the deacons before we do the need.
Well,
that's a confusion I have. I'm confused easily.
Let me thank you for your point for a variety of reasons, but especially because it segues into what we're in fact going to do next. So it does set us up. What we're going to do, what I want to do is take up for all of us that question about what are these, what does God want done? You know, the diaconal ministry of connecting the church to the world in which we live, that's the road that we're on right now, and that's the corner that we're going to turn unless there's some emergency. So let's do that and begin. Where did my best friend Emily go? Here she is, right here. The question is about, we have talked about, there's a dark background for us, and we have listened to the message of the Spirit to this church, and that message certainly includes the fact that our gifts and the exercise of those gifts need to be dually connected. One is that they need to be grounded in love. The other is that they need to function in community with a rich sense of usness that Bishop Drew was talking about last night. And we have owned with some tweaking the idea that we all have certain powers that we have been given by virtue of life, ministry, gift from God, whatever, but they're there. Now, when we talk about ministry, ministry, as I said earlier, is to be a representative. A minister is a representative. Ministry is representing the interests of God. So, taking this gentleman's theme, what the diaconal ministry does at one level of our life, what are God's interests? What does God seem to want done in God's name, in this church community, and in the world around this church? What? Yes, sir. Can we get it? Nate?
The so-called outline of the faith, I think, has a good... The so-called outline of the faith, the little catechism, yes, in the prayer book, has a good lead-in for that in my own understanding, which is God in Christ is reconciling the world to himself. That's what we're about. That's what we're supposed to be about.
Reconciling the world to God. Okay? Reconciling the world to God, which is a ministry of proclamation, a ministry of teaching, a ministry of witness, but the essential thing, or an essential thing, is that this world and its relationship with God, which is one of the things that certainly in the United States is sagging a good bit. Yes, ma'am.
To go and find those who are suffering so that they may have hope and to be included.
Okay, hope for those who are suffering, to find those, to be a proactive, seeking, heat-seeking church. Yes, sir.
Justice for all. I'll quote Cornel West, and justice is what love looks like in public.
Okay. Justice for all. Okay. Yes, sir.
Conversion.
I'm sorry?
Conversion.
Conversion. You want to say a little bit more about that?
Conversion. No, thank you.
From to. From what to what? From what
we should be teaching, we should be developing Sunday school curriculums that make sense. We should be about ways of incorporating our young people into liturgy that are constructive and wholesome. We should be teaching people about Jesus without being embarrassed that their religion is equal to our own.
Mm-hmm.
We should go out and convert those around us by doing for them the things that they need. That, for instance, in my neighborhood, there are dozens and dozens of families who heat with wood all winter long. Mm-hmm. They have no other way to heat or to cook.
Mm-hmm.
We've developed a wood ministry, if you will, where parishioners go out and cut trees and deliver firewood on... Those are the basic diaconal kinds of things that that make for conversion.
I think that's a good point. Part of what I heard in the first part of your presentation, conversion is certainly part of it, but the word nurture came to my mind as you were talking about young people, and that is that a fair word to attach to your point about conversion? So that nurture is part of that, because we're not starting from someplace else. We're talking about building in as it goes along. Yes, ma'am, back here, and then we'll come over this way.
In looking at the definition of spiritual power, virtue of a personal relationship with God, I just want to comment that in the African American tradition, spiritual power would not be possessed or owned by just one person. It would be something owned by the community, which gives power in a prophetic sense. And from that, you can do many things. So the notion of one person possessing some special relationship is almost a false relationship. Mm-hmm. It's the power of the congregation, so that's a- which empowers, which allows you to speak in tongues, to have a worship and praise that is infectious. And that's the way one would come into what is God calling us to do, because it's from that power the prophetic witness happens. And the pastoral response would be that the people of the church who are pastoral. Mm-hmm. So it's almost a disconnect in some sense.
I see. Okay. That's a particular attribute that would belong to a community rather than being attributed to any one person within it. Very good. Thank you. There was a hand over here, back in the corner, Sue, before you, and then we'll come back to you.
I think it starts with reconciliation, but then it goes into transformation.
Transformation.
And it's about the kingdom. Mm-hmm. And the church, I think, is like it's a way of ushering in the kingdom, but love is the model for how we live in God's kingdom. And love is it transforms us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so...
Okay. Transforms. Tell me a little bit about what would somebody look like if they had been transformed? What would be the qualities that we would recognize in a transformed person?
That would be 1 Corinthians 13.
Okay, 13. The doing their gifts in love and all that. Okay. And Sue had it, was next with the hand. And then we'll come, I think, Ben and then Linda. See, this is Francis.
It's on. Okay. I'm a little bit concerned that... in some of our conversation, we behave as though the world is the enemy. And if we're going to talk about what the interests of God are and reconciliation, it seems to me that the first thing that we're called to do is to love the world that God has made. And I think that takes us in our current environment deeply into the work of translation. You know, we have... incredible language, which is totally incomprehensible. I used to be in education. I used to call it edu-speak, and I think there's religio-speak. And religio-speak makes us feel safe because it helps us recognize our community and the people that we're connected to. But it means that we are often quite unable to serve our neighbor because we can't hear the language that they are speaking, which is also God-given language.
Good
so
point.
For me, one of the missions of the mission of the church is to love the world that God has made and do whatever we need to do to speak language that includes, loves, and is comprehensive and comprehensible. Thank you.
That's I think a good point, because there's in working with the world around us and all of its dimensions, if what we're saying is unintelligible or comes off wrong. There's a wonderful story about Father Kino, who was a missionary during the Spanish period in the South American Southwest in the 16th century. And he went to some people, and he wanted to tell these Indians about the resurrection. And so he took a fly and he stunned the fly and then lifted his hand off of it, and the fly kind of woke up and flew away. And he took whatever the Indians said in response to this as being the proclamation of the resurrection. So they gave him whatever he heard the sentence, he went around and told it. Well, it turned out the sentence was, "I think it's dead." You know, and it was not a terribly successful evangelistic effort, you know, for the for what we're talking about there. So, yes, man, right here.
God loved the world so that he gave his son. The church is an instrument. Jesus says the church is a servant. The spiritual power of the church is only unleashed when it's doing God's will. These powers are not abstract. They have no relationship to anything except happening when God wants them to happen. And therefore, the clarity about the transformation of the community at large being God's intention is very important so that the church can get itself properly organized.
Very good point. Thank you. We're going to go here, and we're going to turn a corner in a minute. Linda was next, and then we'll go over here, and then we're going to get ready to turn a corner. So, Linda?
I'd just like to point out that in order to show God's love out in the world, we have to show it first before we're going to get people to listen to us. And I know that the church is wonderful about those people who are in crisis, but there are everyday people that are in your neighborhood who may be marginal as well and not on your radar. And simple things like smiling or asking how their day is and stuff is a beginning. And listening very carefully. And that's diaconal ministry to me, but it's also diaconal ministry for everyone. Mm-hmm. And in order to do that and find out what their needs are, we first have to listen very carefully.
Right. And it is a wider community effort. You know, to say that, you know, that we hired someone to go around and be nice for us, you know, is not the, you know, that's not the, doesn't work. There was a hand over here. Yes, ma'am.
It seems to me that we have a responsibility to raise awareness of others of their worthiness of God's love and mercy. And if you continually reinforce that, they eventually will be able to accept God's love and mercy, and that is transformative.
Mm-hmm. To make it real for them. Okay, thank you very much, Brad.
Marcus Borg was in Fredericksburg, and one of the things I heard him saying was that a majority of the people in the culture assume that we're talking about it's all about heaven and hell, and they don't buy it, so it creates a big void. And so everything that I hear what people are saying this morning is the alternative. That's the filling of the void,
right,
of if it's not heaven or hell, then what is it?
Mm-hmm. Good point and good question. Okay. Are we ready to turn a corner here? All right. We have said that these particular gifts that we're focused on right now are to be exercised in pursuit of the interests of God, which include reconciling the world to God, bringing people into relationship with God, providing hope for those who are suffering. And suffering, I'm sure in this case, includes physical suffering and relational suffering and emotional and spiritual, all kinds of things. Justice for all, our prophetic role there. Conversion, Sunday school, youth, teaching how we run these ministries, this thing, and conversion and nurture, how we raise, how we keep alive, and this is church focused. Empowering community, being an empowering community, reconciliation, and leading to transformation through love, and that people really lead different transformed lives. That transformed makes people different. Flannery O'Connor once said that, paraphrasing or taking this thing from the Bible, said that you will know the truth, and the truth will make you odd. And to be transformed, you know, is to in fact be into something a little different from the world in which we live. To love the world that God has made, to speak the language that includes and loves and comprehends, so that holding within ourselves the love of the world or the love of God does not mean a whole lot unless we manage to convey to the world that love is not only real, but has a real impact in terms of how people live. And so that's part of what God would have us do. We're saying that the church is an instrument, not an end in itself, you know, but a tool to be used in the exercise of making a difference in this world, in the lives of the people in the church and outside, showing God's love, a wider community effort, raising others' awareness of their deservingness of God's love and mercy. And I would say here too, part of it is people deserve it, but also they need it. You know, because you know, one of the things that's happened is that we have talked about God's love so much that people tend to assume it. You know, and that the question of deservingness, you know, has ceased to operate in a lot of people's minds because, you know, it's as natural as sunrise. I mean, sure, that's what God does, and that's what God's there for, you know, the kind of the eternal grandparent, you know, with a cosmic cookie and eternal glass of milk. And that's not, you know, there's so the deservingness on the one hand, but the need for on the other, and filling the void, if not heaven or hell, what and what is in between. That's what we think God wants done in this world. Now, the question that we have is to take now, in your tables, a few minutes and raise two questions. Two questions. How can people like us use gifts like ours to serve interests like these? How can people like us use gifts like ours to serve interests like these? That's the first question. So be creative. I mean, if your answer is get up in the morning and go to work, that's not the most creative thing that you could do. Talk about being creative. Some things that maybe we're not doing, okay? Okay, this is not time to talk about what you do, because you're doing wonderful things. It's the cutting edge of this. How can people like us use gifts like ours to serve interests like these? The second question is, what can our diocesan community and our diocesan structures do to help this to happen? So the first question is, what are some things that we might be doing that we're not doing now to serve these interests? That's the first question. And the second question is, what about the diocese? Now where we're coming back to is right where Bishop Drew left us last night, the usness. You know, we are together in this. So how can our diocese as community, just, you know, we know each other, we care about each other, we're stuck with each other, I mean, whatever makes it community, but also our diocesan structures. I mean, there is a formality to our diocese that we don't want to overlook. So it's both. You know, what could our diocesan community do to help this to happen? And what might our diocesan structures do to help this to happen? So if you would take about 10 minutes in wherever you are, in some kind of gaggle of people, and talk about that, then what we're going to do is, now I'm going to suggest that we not, Emily's done a great job, but we're not going to put this on newsprint. What I'm going to do is commend the minute-taking to the diocesan staff, wherever they may be, so that there is a complete record that goes there. And well, Emily, you ought to write up here too. We will keep you. You're doing such a great job. But we want to make sure that this is the piece that people understand. Okay, got the two questions? Okay, you got 10 minutes. Have at it. Thank you.